thus far are TULIP, those five basic essential doctrines in the Calvinist or in the Reformed tradition. Now, let's return to that business of who are these elect that we've been talking about, okay? Calvin's system depended fundamentally on his doctrine of absolute predestination. Absolute predestination. You may just recall that in the time of St. Augustine, there was a question of predestination. You may just recall that in the time of the Carolingian Renaissance, for example, among other theological problems to which people addressed themselves, the problem of predestination raised its head. It was a problem that came up again and again and again in the history of Christianity. From one point of view, it's not at all surprising that it would have done so. Because to Christians, you see, who believed in an omniscient God, a God who knows everything, there would inevitably be the question, if God knows everything, clearly he knows my fate. If he knows my fate, has he willed it? If God knows my fate, is there anything I can do to alter my fate? Is it preordained? Well, Catholic theology generally came down on the side of saying people had been endowed with free will, and although God knew the outcome, he didn't impose that outcome. He didn't force that outcome. For Calvin, and for those before him who had spoken of predestination, though Calvin spoke more rigorously, more fully, more thoroughly on this subject than anyone before him ever did, for Calvin, all people from before time were predestined to salvation or to damnation. Nothing that a human being did in his or her lifetime mattered in this scheme. All was decided from the very beginning. Now, that is of a piece with a rejection of the idea of works, for example, as being efficacious, as having some kind of an impact on human life. But let's remember, Calvin is starting with God and arguing his way back or down, if you like, or across over something to man. He starts with the absolute sovereignty of God. And God's sovereignty is so absolute, you see, in the Calvinist sense, that it cannot be influenced by anything that humans do, by any act that I might commit, good or bad, you see. God's sovereignty is so great, and the distance between God and man so great, that nothing an individual does can actually have any beneficial impact. Now, it just might occur to you, and it occurred to Calvin, and it occurred to Calvin's contemporaries, it just might occur to you to say, we ought to all go out and be Calvinists because we just eat, drink, and be merry. Makes no difference. Might as well just have a great time. Because surely if I cannot win God's favor, then presumably I can't go out and lose it either. If I am sinful, this is merely my human nature. If I'm not sinful, well, that's this irresistible grace working in me. I can't take any credit for that, but I may very well want to go out and have a good time. Well, to fight off the possibility, and of course I'm saying all that a bit tongue-in-cheek, though only a bit, because the problem was there and it was recognized. To fight off the possibility of hedonism, Calvin taught about the signs of election. Now, strictly speaking, Calvin said, no one can know. No one can know whether they are elect or whether they are damned. Calvin said that salvation was absolutely assured for the elect. But that posed another problem, quite different in its way from the problem of hedonism. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you die. Don't you want to know? Aren't we curious? From Calvin's point of view, you see, one should simply not worry about this. You haven't got any control over it anyway? Don't worry about it. It's all in the hands of God. Human nature, however, is going to lead us to want to know. So Calvin offered the signs of election, perhaps as a serious theological proposition, perhaps as a kind of a matter of pastoral theology, to minister to human doubt, to human concern. Now, the signs, quite simple. A public profession of faith, making your profession of faith publicly before the authorities, regular attendance at church services, and leading a godly life.